Welcome to the Playing Injured podcast, where we have conversations that help people turn their adversity into their advantage. Welcome to another episode of Playing Injured. Special guest today, we have the founder and CEO of We First, also the host of the Lead with We podcast, not me, We. He's an international keynote speaker, top-selling author, another book, Lead with We. It's a theme here that you'll see. And then we have Simon Mannering. Simon, how are we feeling today?
I'm great, Josh. And you know what? With my name and the way it's spelled, I'm impressed, man. That was great. And I'm feeling great. Thank you. It's a really exciting to get a chance to speak to your listeners.
I love it. And so I'm excited to have you on. I've been looking at a lot of your content. And like I told you before, you are ahead of your time. When it comes to social media and different things like that. So can't wait to jump into your backstory, jump into a little bit of where we might even be headed. But first, I always love starting a podcast with who is Simon and how does he spend his time today?
Well, Simon, firstly, is a dad. I'm a dad of two amazing daughters with my wife. And, you know, I think if I would pride myself in anything, it's my family and commitment to that. You know, as we traveled around the world, I'm Australian, as you can probably hear the funny accent I have. And then I'm, you know, Australian. I'm really, really proud of that. But like a lot of Aussies, you know, every time you go to a party anywhere, there's always one Australian. I'm one of them. You know, you're always like, why is it? And if there's two Aussies at one party, I think one of us has to leave. So Australian. And I'm a writer by trade, but I use the skill of writing to really help business become a force for good for a lot of reasons. So sometimes the greatest gift you can give yourself is to use your skill in a way that's most meaningful to you. And then you really feel fulfilled because of it, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I love that. See, fulfillment.
Yeah.
I've watched some of your content and you talked about success and what that truly means versus fulfillment and the journey that you had. And Simon, you've had a great career working with some of the biggest brands in the world, Nike, Motorola, things of that nature, and writing for them. But you had this journey of not necessarily feeling fulfilled. Yeah. Why do you think that is? I feel like folks would dream to work for companies like that. Why do you?
Yeah, I mean, thank you for the question. And also, I just want to say I really kind of empathize and feel for everyone listening to the podcast, because it's really hard as a young entrepreneur or as a young person in the world to make your way, to know which way is up. What the hell should you be doing? What's your purpose? How do you find that alignment between who you are and what you do in the world? And for me, I spent a lot of time traveling around the world, living out different versions of success. I did a Bachelor of Arts degree, a law degree, and then I was in the advertising business in the UK and then in the US. And what I, in hindsight, realized, Josh, is that I kept living out these different versions of success, not really knowing who I was. And when it showed up was when I was in my mid-30s, mid to late 30s, I had a young family, two young kids, and I'm living in LA and I'm walking around my backyard going, why the hell am I so unhappy? You know, I've lived these versions of success, but it didn't matter whether I'm winning a shiny statue for writing a Nike commercial or running a large global account as a worldwide creative director on Motorola for Ogilvy, their ad agency, something was missing. And about 3 weeks after that, Josh, I happened to walk into my kitchen in LA and there was an answering machine, which shows you what an old guy I am. There was an answering machine, five messages in it. And the first message was my mom kind of yelling down the phone because she lives in Sydney and she was trying to reach me in the States in LA. And she's like, Simon, wake up, pick up the phone. And the next message, beep, Simon, wake up, pick up the phone, beep. Another one, my sister yelling down the phone because they're trying to reach me in my bedroom to wake me up from the answering machine in the kitchen. Fourth message, my mum, upset, Simon, please pick up the phone. And then finally, the last message, and mum just said, Simon, dad died. He was calling to say goodbye. Call us when you wake up.
Wow.
And I hadn't seen my dad for 5 years. We had a bit of a difficult relationship, which I think a lot of men do with their fathers and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I've got to tell you, Josh, like the collapsing of a whole night of phone calls on their side into 45 seconds as answering machines messages one after another was a bit of a blow to the gut. I got to be honest. I was like winded by it. I was like, cause he'd been sick for a long time.
Right.
And for, I don't know, 17 years. So, you know, those words, wake up, took on a profundity for me that I didn't even think she intended. My mum was just like, wake up when you get out of bed in the morning, which I did. But I took it to mean something much more, which is wake up to what the hell you're doing in life. And I wasn't challenged professionally so much anymore. I wasn't finding the meaning I needed. And then I was destabilized kind of emotionally because dad's passing. And it was a gift, you know, in hindsight, even though it was so tragic with dad passing, in the sense that I got out of my own way for the first time in my life, Josh. I got out of my own way. I was so all over the shop. I didn't know what the hell, which way it was up. I was just so confused. And then a new journey kind of showed up for me in terms of business as a force for good. And so it was just a really, really unpredictable road. But I think ultimately, when I look back, I was looking for more meaning in my life, and I didn't just want to sell things for the sake of selling them. And I didn't want to look for fulfillment by what others said outside. I wanted to fill myself up by what I give to others. And that's where fulfillment comes from. It's an inside out job. It's not outside in.
Right. 100%. So it's a few things that I want to unpack there. First off, you talk about validation and getting it from these titles. Yeah. And it's an inside job first to fulfill yourself rather than relying on others to tell you, oh, wow, you have a great job. You're great. Or even them telling you, oh, you have a bad job. You're terrible. Either way, if you fulfill yourself from within, it doesn't matter what any opinions mean outside of yourself.
It's exactly right. And I think I'll speak for myself, but maybe some of your listeners can identify with this. I think we hide from the work we've got to do on ourselves.
Yeah.
I think we put a Band-Aid or a scotch tape or a plaster over it with an award or a statue or a recognition or a win in a game, when on the inside, you're insecure, you're unsure, you're unhappy, you're depressed. And I think you kind of just keep papering over it with these external validations until some point in your life it shows up and you've got to look that square in the face and say, listen, I got to grow. I got to do some work. I got to show up differently in the world. And it's really hard and it's private work and there's no reward other than kind of how you feel on the inside over time. But then that transforms how you show up in the world.
100%. And usually when it happens, it's something that punches you in the face.
I was an idiot.
Yeah, it's a challenge. It's pain where it's like, I can't hide from this anymore. In order to grow from this pain or this lesson, you know, whether it's a, you know, father passing, best friend passing, losing a job, breakup, whatever the case may be, that challenge actually reveals the work to the point where you have to put the work in order to get past the problem and wake you up. Right.
No, really well put. I mean, I've taken a few knocks in my career, and we all do. It doesn't matter whether it's a sporting career, an entrepreneurial career, some really heavy knocks that kind of floor you. And someone said to me once, I was like, why did that happen? Or I'm kind of, you know, complaining about it. And they just said, some nuts are harder to crack.
Yeah.
And you really have to take a heavy knock to wake you up and to see the work that you've got to do. And there's that other expression, I can't remember whose it is, but like, the cracks are where the light gets in. Yep. You know, when you open up, that's where you can start to reveal the work that you've got to do.
Yeah, 100%. And so when I guess, how long did it take for you to kind of detach from the identity of being, you know, at these amazing companies, having an amazing career, to actually going in a direction that you knew would fulfill you?
It wasn't that long, but I will say this. In the last, you know, 15 years of my career, I've been lucky enough to be around a lot of well-known people and high-profile people, whether they're speakers, athletes, whatever it might be. And I tell you, none of us know what we're doing. None of us get it right. No one's sitting there at 20 with a roadmap and it all falls into place. So if you're a younger person looking ahead, just know that we're all as lost as each other and take sort of heart in that. But I, about 3 weeks after that happened, and I was kind of in this churn of emotions, I read a speech that Bill Gates gave at the World Economic Forum that year. It was 2007, 2008, the big meltdown, the big economic meltdown that was happening all around the world. I don't know if, you know, some folks remember it, but I certainly do. And everyone was losing their homes. They were losing their healthcare. They were losing all their hopes, and all around the world, Greece, Iceland, you know, the Gulf states, and all over the US. And the speech said, the private sector business needs to show up differently. You know, we're creating a lot of problems out there, and we're uniquely equipped to solve for them. So what are we going to do? And so, having run large pieces of business like Motorola and launched the Razor phone and things like that back in the day, and having kind of been a writer with others at the ad agency Wieden & Kennedy on big movements around sport and so on, I thought, what if you took the power of narrative and story and movement building that you see in popular culture, that you see in so well in brands like Nike, what if you applied that to business as a force for good? And so I thought I'd answer Bill Gates' challenge, because he said, how do we do this? And I spent 3 years writing a book called We First, How Brands and Consumers Use Social Media to Build a Better World. And this was when there was only Facebook, and I was a few months old. There was no Twitter, no Instagram, no WhatsApp, no Pinterest. It was like, what could happen if we could have a dialogue between fans and sporting teams, between customers and brands, between citizens and institutions? And I thought there could be huge potential there. And so the book came out, it did really well, and that started my company like 13 years ago.
So this is really interesting to me. Did you know these social media companies would grow? Did you know social media would become what it is today? Or what was kind of your mindset when you wrote the book? What is it now, 11 years old.
Yeah, I mean, and it was well received. It was a New York Times bestseller and voted best marketing book of the year by Strategy and Business, which you never know going to these things, but it did validate something at the time. That, and what happened for me, Josh, was when you travel around the world a lot and you work on different brands, you're constantly seeing different ways the business is showing up, different ways the brands are engaging consumers, and so on and so on. And after a while, you get this pattern recognition where you go, oh, I kind of see what's happening here across all of these examples. It doesn't make you smarter than anyone else. It just, you've got a privilege. You've got this unique line of sight that no one else can see, because you're seeing all these different ways in, because every week is a different brand or a different company or a different market and different strategy. And so I had a very strong instinct that these social technologies like Facebook at the time were really going to change everything. Because up till then, you couldn't really talk to an institution. You couldn't talk to a brand. You couldn't talk to an elite athlete. And you were just, you just had your opinion in private. And I thought, if that was put to good use, we could do a lot of really interesting things. And then you saw Arab Spring, the revolution in Egypt, and, people tweeting about what was happening on the ground. And then obviously over the last decade, we've seen all of these examples. I had a very, very strong sort of, intellectual but also emotional reaction to the possibility of this stuff. I thought it could be really transformative. And it has been, in some ways good, in some ways really bad.
Yeah, 100%. And I would say just the fact that you put it out there and what it's grown out to, I don't even know if you could imagine it.
No, in the book, I kind of put a vision for what the world could look like at the end. But I didn't realize just how all-consuming it would be. And I think social media, here's what I would say after being deeply invested in it for a long time and watched so many examples of it and been involved myself. There's a tension between connecting with people at a heart level and rallying around sporting teams you love or businesses you love and really showing up in a positive, inclusive way. Right. At the other extreme, it's really divisive and it pulls people apart and it polarizes them. And we've all seen that play out really, really clearly. And the challenge is the algorithms now are designed in a way that they reward you with content that reflects what you already believe by virtue of what you you share.
Exactly.
So you get deeper and deeper into your own wormhole, and the net result is you get pulled further and further apart from people with a different opinion.
Right.
And the challenge there is, if we want to use business to have a positive impact at a time when it's really needed, we can't even agree on what reality looks like, because people have a completely different experience of what life is because of what they're told through all of these screens. And that's a real problem.
Yeah. And when you're consuming it every single day, and depending on what your screen time is, it could be 10 hours a day, right?
Yeah.
Where you literally have a reality and a perspective that is totally different from somebody else.
Yeah.
Who's going through the same thing that you're going through, and there's no way we can come together.
It's really hard to come together.
Yeah. It creates, like you said, we've created, cancel culture where folks are getting canceled, and it's a lot of negativity, a lot of despair. And it's not necessarily the fault of the consumer, because they're not really aware. And I wouldn't even blame it on the social media algorithms either. It's just kind of what has happened, I guess.
Yeah, there's a lot of forces that shape that. But as you say, it's like a fish doesn't see the water it's swimming in. And we're all swimming in our own water, and it's so different. I think it's a concern though, because
it is.
There's a lot of issues out there, climate and other things, that are really starting to affect people's lives. And you're much younger than I am, Josh, and I got two daughters, 23 and 20. And when I think about, as a parent, their future, I go, I'm really worried about what that's going to look like. So you go, well, what are we going to do about it? Well, we've got to come together in new ways. You know, we've really got to sort of rally business, rally entrepreneurship, rally innovation, and look at these challenges we face as marketplace opportunities in disguise. And there's all these companies like pulling carbon out of the air to make new products that people love. The auto industry's transitioned to electric vehicles. Every automaker said they're now going to fully electric vehicles. You've got clean beauty, you've got clean food, and all of these different trends out there. So business is waking up, but the issues we're solving for are so big that we've all got to do something differently more quickly to actually kind of solve for them. And I think that's one of the challenges out there. And when social media, this connective tissue that gets rid of geography and time, and you can connect to anyone in the world, should be so powerful to that end, but I think it's under revving, you know?
Yeah. So I guess with We First, why the emphasis on we instead of you? And have you seen we being a solution to help us today, help us moving forward?
Yeah, it's a great question. Thank you. And what would I say? When I looked around, I mean, I was a self-important ad guy writing ads and thinking, you know, my whatever doesn't stink. But when I looked at the global economic meltdown and I was looking for something more meaningful in my life after my dad passed, I was kind of like, what's the root of the problem here? Like, why is this all going pear-shaped? And as an Australian, we've got this idea of, you know, you're a mate, g'day, mate, you know, and everyone's equal. There really is. It's a really true thing. And I just thought there was something really unfair about some people making, you know, so much money in investment banking or whatever and everyone else taking a hit. And so I thought, well, what's the root of the problem? And I thought about it as really just this me first mentality, which is I'm going to take care of me at the cost of everybody else. And it was a driving force in individuals, companies, industries, America, you know, other countries all around the world, you know, in the global north. I mean, that was the 90s, greed is good, all of that sort of driver out there. And I thought, well, it's clearly not getting the results we need because too many people are getting left behind. And there's surely a way to do business where more people can do well. Right. And that's just opportunity for everyone. So the opposite of that, I spent so much time thinking about it because it's sort of self-evident to me now. But back then I was like, I have no idea. What the hell do I know? You know? And I thought, well, what's the opposite of me first? And it's we first. And it's about working together to put the well-being of the community, the larger group, first. And why is that important? It's important because when the whole is good, the parts can thrive. When society is good, businesses can thrive. When a community is good, people can thrive. But if the community or the planet or the environment breaks down, we're all screwed. Yes. So it's not do good. It's just logical. It's like we're breaking, like the planet right now, it is our life support system. And the way that we're showing up is damaging it to the point that we're going to suffer. That doesn't make any sense.
Right. And it's about like abundance. Right.
Yeah.
So much we can all get amazing things. And what I've seen is just a scarcity mindset when so many times over and over again, we see what abundance and that abundance mindset can do for us as entrepreneurs, leaders, in whatever endeavor you do. And it leads to helping. It leads to us succeeding together. And going farther, why do you think folks have that scarcity mindset that keeps us from the we instead of me?
Yeah, it's a interesting question. And I want to kind of point back to one thing that was really moving for me over the holidays. Over Christmas holidays, I was pretty tired. The last 3 years have been super tiring to be an entrepreneur and everything. And I thought I wanted to understand how we need to show up in the world in a we sense differently.
Yeah.
So we know the folks at the Pachamama Alliance, which is this organization protecting the sacred headwaters of the Amazon. And so I went for 2 weeks to the sacred headwaters of the Amazon at the Ecuadorian and Peruvian border and met with three indigenous tribes, including the Zapa and Achua tribe, and met with their shaman and elders, and through translators, talked to them about how they see the relationship between each other and the planet.
Mm.
And a couple of things to answer your question. They see themselves related to every living thing. to the trees, to the other species, and to each other. They're all family, family in the truest sense. Why would you hurt your family? They see trees as children, and you're cutting down these massive 600-year-old Amazonian trees, and it's so painful to them because they recognize that they're not in control of the system. They're part of the ecosystem. Right. That was really powerful. The other part I wanted to mention to answer your question was they believe that when someone takes more than they need and threatens the whole, that it's a sign of mental illness. It is actually madness that you would take more than you need because you're threatening the survival of everyone and yourself.
Right.
And they've worked this out over centuries and thousands of years of literally living with nature. And so I think we're not learning something new. I think we're remembering what we forgot,
wow,
which is we're connected to each other. It's chemically hardwired in our brains. We love the world we live in. You go and have a surf, you go on a hike, you go snowboarding, you know, when you go out in nature, it restores you. And I think we've just got to come back to that. We've got to fall in love with nature again, which sounds so damn simple and obvious. But if we keep looking at lives through these tiny little pencil, you know, screens and lenses, it's pulling us apart. It's making us more important than anything. It's reinforcing the fact that the world is built around us instead of us being part of a much larger world that we've got to kind of be a part of.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, you've seen folks, they talk about, hey, getting off the phone, getting away from technology. What do you think about that?
Man, that is so important because it does my head in. I mean, think about the last few years, whether it's politics, whether it's COVID, there's this exhaustion that comes over you where you're literally, I can't take it anymore. I look at my phone and I'm like, I scan the headlines in half a second and I shut it off just to keep my own head straight.
Right.
And so I do a digital detox every weekend. I'll do posts and things and they'll be scheduled or they'll be posted. But I don't look at the social media and I don't look at headlines, any news on the weekend. I have to track during the week, but I can't be happy if I'm looking at it all day, every day. I just get exhausted, fearful, worried, and so concerned. I just don't enjoy life. And I also want to model that behavior for my kids and family. I mean, you know, it's hard to look at. I mean, do you find that, Josh?
I mean, I've been exhausted looking at different headlines, and it's always for some reason, you know, we know negative news sells.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Negativity, the emotional connection to make you scared, worried, mad, sad, whatever the case may be. And it's definitely been draining for me. And I think for most people, I think for a lot of
people. And we're so tired anyway with work and with COVID and fear and everything. Do we then have to take a content diet that exhausts us even more, you know?
Right. And so, but it makes me think, right? Because folks do feel like they need it to stay connected, right? It's a positive to it as well. But it is exhausting and it does string the algorithms, especially TikTok, Instagram, these different algorithms, they really know us to a deep sense.
They're
scrolling.
They know how it is literally. And if you look at a film like The Social Dilemma, where there was other engineers and so on that have talked about this, they are literally, you know, crafting the algorithms to make you addicted to the content. And here's the reality. I mean, we used to go to a rock concert when I was younger. You go to a live performance and you'd go there, you'd scream your head off, you'd be having, you know, drinks, you'd be partying all night. You go home, the music's ringing in your ear, you know, you catch up with your friends who you went with and that was it. Now you go to a concert and all people do is look at the concert through their phone and see if they could post a clip about it, show the other people that they're there. Like, we've lost the direct experience of life.
Yeah.
And I don't think people are aware of what that's cost us. Even like we've got a farmer's market down the road here in LA. And on the weekends, we go and get some food and groceries or whatever. And you walk around and you see real food, not in a supermarket or whatever, you know, but real food and real people. And you have community connection again, not on social media, but real world connection. And it feels so good, you know. And I think a lot of us are coming back that way. I think it nurtures us as human beings. It strengthens communities. It makes you a better father, brother, cousin, wife, daughter, whatever it might be. You show up better at work. Because if you look at all the research around what makes happiness, you need a sense of community. You need a sense of purpose. You need time in nature. You need a sense of fulfillment. So all of these things are important.
100%. And I think, you know, social media has created this culture, especially, you know, growing up now, is like your status symbol is the amount of followers you have,
right?
The amount of notoriety that you have, how, you know, plugged in you are to what's going on social media. That's what's cool, per se. That's what is, it kind of creates status, right? But I don't know if it actually creates fulfillment, now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. I mean, you asked before why people are so me first. I think it's driven by this individuated place, sense we have of being in the world. It's driven by fear, and it's driven by a scarcity mentality where, you know, if I don't have it, then you'll have it. And if, and, you know, and my success comes at the, you know, the cost of you. And I think that's been driven by a lot of marketing, a lot of advertising, you know, the disparity of wealth around the world. And, you know, this idea that we've been sold on for so long that success is more important than happiness. And success looks like, who knows,
right?
Planes, cars, God knows what. And I think you're seeing the younger generations coming through now, and a lot of them are disengaging in social because they're trying to identify. And I think it was the Dalai Lama at one point said this, you know, I just don't want to say it was mine, but it's like, success is not the key to happiness. Happiness is the key to success.
Yes. Yeah.
So what makes you happy? For me, it's time with my family. It's doing something that's fulfilling. It's having a surf in the ocean. It's having a drink and a laugh with my friends.
Yeah.
And, feeling joyful each day, you know, just you wake up, you feel good, you want to have at it, and off you go. I think for many of us, it's like, who's looked at my post, and have I got enough money, and am I as good enough as that person who seems to be doing better than me? And we're constantly not enough, and it eats away at us. It's hard, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, there's some folks out there who they post a post on Instagram and they get a lot of likes, you know, that's a successful day.
It's a chemical hit. It's literally, you know, dopamine, or, you know, it's a hit and you want another hit. Yeah.
100%. No, I love it. Lead your podcast and your book, Lead with We.
Yeah.
Podcast, book, Lead with We Cause. Why is it so important as a leader to keep the we in mind instead of me in mind as a leader specifically?
I think, you know, everyone who plays sport at any level knows team dynamics. And you know you've got to show up not just for yourself, but for others in a team capacity to make a difference. Otherwise, you're not going to succeed as a team. And we've all seen sporting teams that just have one star, but they can only get so far. They've really got to work as a team. But in business, here's the difference. Because so many people, including young people, are aware of how much trouble we're in, whether it's homelessness on the streets like we see here in LA, or it's climate and all these extreme weather things that seem to be happening everywhere, or whether it's the loss of, you know, different species out there, and we hear about all of these animals and creatures that are being lost, or whether it's plastic in the ocean, you know, just pick your issue. They're all looking at business now and saying, wait a second, are you part of the problem or part of the solution? Like, am I going to buy your stuff because I like the product first, but I like the way you're showing up in the world, you treat your people well, you make your products well, you're giving back, or are you actually part of the problem? And so the market forces there are there now. For an entrepreneur, if you're a solopreneur, whether you've got a small company, you've got a growing company, you've got a large company, employees, consumers, and investors want to work for, buy from, and invest in companies that are doing good. And so just from a market forces point of view, if you live in a world that's challenged and that's reinforced every day in the headlines, then the audience you're talking to are going to look at you and say, hey, how are you helping to solve things so my life will be better? And so it's important to choose to lead in service of the well-being of the we, the larger number of people. And that could be your community, your state, your country, the world, whatever it might be. Secondly, I would say, if you don't want to just look at it from a business lens, you've got to ask yourself, if you're a young person, what's life going to look like in 2030, 2040, 2050?
Yeah.
And if you look at any of the research out there, irrespective of politics on both sides of the aisle and everything, it looks pretty scary because of the carbon we're putting in the air, the carbon in the chemicals in the soil, the plastics in the ocean. We're seeing all the consequences of this. And so I don't see that as a negative. I actually see this as an incredible moment in time where people will reward your business and help you grow by doing good. So when I wrote the book Lead with We, we've been doing this work for 13 years with everyone from tiny startups to Toms and Timberland and Virgin Unite and so many purpose leaders that everybody knows, through to very large global, you know, enterprises like SAP or Sony Pictures or, you know, Avery Dennison, these big companies with hundreds of thousands of employees. And so I wanted to take all of that learning from that work and all the experience I had around movement building and so on Nike and Motorola and other things and say, here's the roadmap. Here's how you grow your business and make a difference. A, so the market forces reward you and you make money and get richer and all that stuff that, you know, is a healthy ambition. B, so you make a difference to these problems that are affecting your life and it'll make your future better. But even just as importantly, C, you find that fulfillment in your work where you go, I'm not just selling stuff to sell stuff, or I'm not just going to a job to get a paycheck, but I'm actually doing something that makes me feel good on the inside. So it's a really selfish thing you can do to lead with we, which is to work together to serve, you know, the greater well-being.
100%. And so it all goes back to being fulfilled and helping others.
Yeah. Healthy self-interest. It doesn't mean you're a do-gooder, a greenie, or God knows what. It means that you're a human being who has a healthy self-interest and recognizes that you want to use your skills and talent in business to grow your business, have the lifestyle you want, but do it in a way that will fix the problems that are affecting your life and make you feel fulfilled because of that. And so I lay out step by step all the learnings, all the different strategic and tactical things that the smartest brands in the world are doing so that you can follow it as a roadmap. Because my job is I've been lucky enough to do this work for so long, is to get that out to as many people as possible so we can get there faster. You know?
100%. I love that. So, Simon, where can folks find your podcast? Where can folks find your book? And where can they find you and follow your journey?
Well, you know, I really see my role to be of service to all of you entrepreneurs and young people out there that want to, you know, make a good business and change the world for the better. So if you want to be really, really inspired by stories of real companies that are doing this for real and learn from them, listen to the podcast. It's on Apple, Spotify, Google. So just look for Lead With We with Simon Mannering, Lead With We. If you want to actually have me take you through the course based on the book, step by step to show how your business can lead with we to drive your growth, accelerate your growth by creating impact, go to leadwithwecourse.com. So leadwithwecourse.com. And then if you want to go to get the book, just get Lead With We on Amazon. And you know, I cannot tell you how excited everyone should be about the future. I know it looks scary, but this is not the end of something. This is the beginning of a business renaissance where entrepreneurs like you and those of your listeners are going to show up in meaningful ways and find fulfillment and wealth and true happiness by creating companies that are going to solve for problems that make other people's lives better. So don't feel pessimistic about the future. Don't feel down. Go like hell and get busy, because by solving for these issues, you're going to be the companies that other people drive forward and you're going to enjoy the happiness that you deserve.
100%. Simon, I'm so impressed by how ahead of your time you were. 2009, 2011. I was in middle school, I think, right?
Oh, you're making me feel old, mate. You're making me feel way, way old. That's terrible. But
man,
yeah, it was a lonely place back then. No one wanted to talk about this at all. Yeah.
And I remember just the way times have changed, being on the BlackBerry to being on a slide phone, to having the first touch, you know, phone, to having different iPhones, but how social media has a big effect on who we are and how it can really tug at the me. But what I've seen is that the strongest communities on social media have created communities and that we nature, and you bringing that to light and helping other folks who are starting their companies or starting whatever endeavors they have with we in mind instead of me in mind could only help them, could only help others and help the world as a whole. So I appreciate you, you know, leading that discussion and helping folks learn a little bit more about who you are and the mission that you're on to help the world be a better place.
I appreciate you too, Josh. And thank you to all your listeners. And just know this, when we do it together, there's nothing we can't achieve. So inspire people, inspire everyone to build your business, inspire everyone to scale your impact. And then you can wake up tomorrow and go, I'm actually excited about the future rather than worried about it.
Wow. Wow. And it starts with we. It starts with we. I love it, Simon. Appreciate it. Everybody subscribe, not only to Playing Injured, but to Lead With We. Like you said, it's on Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts. And I'll make sure I have that link below along with the book. And Simon, thank you once again.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Josh.
Our brand design and strategy is by Tessa at 5footstudios.com. You can also follow her on Instagram at 5footstudios. Our music is by Lakey Inspired. Go ahead, subscribe so that you never miss an episode, and click the 5 stars to give us a rating. And most importantly, keep playing injured.